Welcome to the Brute Strength Podcast, bringing you worldwide experts from all areas of health and fitness. We cover training, nutrition, coaching, and mindset. Welcome your host, strength and conditioning coach, 2012 and 2013 CrossFit Games champ, Michael Cashew. Mind, body, brute.
Welcome back. This is Michael Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I've got my good friend Justin Sua back on the show. Justin is one of the top mental skills coaches on the planet. He has worked with the Cleveland Browns, with the Boston Red Sox when they won their World Series last year, and he is currently with the Tampa Bay Rays. And usually, we're talking all about mental performance for elite performers and athletes. And today, we're talking about similar things, but about parenting. As a D and I start moving closer and closer to having kids ourselves, I'm just becoming obsessed with learning everything I can about how to think about parenting, how to actually behave as a parent, and how to lead your kids in the best way possible. And Justin is one of the best parents I know. He's written books about a book about parenting. I know that he treats his role as parent as important or more important as he does his career. And he's always trying to optimize. So I know he's spent so much time thinking about and researching the best ways of parenting. And so I was just really interested to hear his take. So whether you are a parent yourself, a one-day parent, or a leader of any sort, because parenting is a lot like leadership, I think you will have a ton to learn from this. So we talk all about how to raise kids that can acknowledge themselves and celebrate their successes while still being humble, how to encourage kids to really think big, how to teach dealing with failure, which he says is probably the most challenging thing to teach kids, how to handle making mistakes. We talk about his book, Parent Pep Talks. And then finally, we have a short discussion about the importance of focus, especially when you have children, and how to keep your biggest priorities top of mind. So without further ado, please help me welcome Justin Sua. Justin, welcome back, brother.
Hey, brother. Glad to be back.
So good to see you again, man. It's been a while.
Likewise. Yeah, I always love our conversations.
So you have you've just had a really exciting thing happen in your family. Your daughter, what's her name?
Eliana.
Eliana just got one of the lead roles in the Hobbs and Shaw movie with The Rock. That is just mind blowing, man. Tell me about what this has been like for your family.
It's been crazy. Can I kind of go backwards and tell how it all transpired? So we are about 2 years ago. So when she was 10 years old, 9 years old, we're watching the Disney Channel. We're watching Disney Channel, and she decided, she says, "Mommy and Daddy, I want to be an actor when I grow up." And anytime your child has some kind of ambition, my wife and I made this point. So we want to water our children's ambition. So whatever, if they want to be entrepreneurs, hey, let's go all in on entrepreneurship. They want to be baseball players, whatever they want to do. Mm-hmm. And here was our youngest saying, "I want to be an actor." And remember us pausing the TV and saying, "Okay, wait, how bad do you want to do it?" And she goes, I really want to be an actor." We said, "Okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to get you an acting coach. We're going to sign you up for camps. We're going to do everything we can to help you be the best actor possible." Well, she did it, and she was terrible. It was bad. It didn't seem like the acting coaches were helping her, and she just wasn't doing very good. But she loved it. It was her passion. And while her siblings were out playing, she was inside the house studying scripts. Driving places in the car, she'd be in the back seat just kind of practicing her crying and her emotions, and she just loved it so much. And it came to the point to where we're like, you know what? Okay, we want to put her in the arena. Let's see if she has what it takes to put her in front of an agency. So we flew to Los Angeles, California, got her in front of an agency, and I took her by my it was me and her to go audition in front of an agent. And she did it, and I was sitting there watching her, and in my mind, I'm like, "Oh, this isn't very good." And lo and behold, the agent says, "Not good enough. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't good. If you want to be great, you got to work." They were very kind, though. They gave her great feedback. And so we're walking back, and I'm thinking, this is it. Like, she's done. Like, it's too devastating. She's she's crying her little eyes out, and she experienced rejection. 9-year-old little girl, 10-year-old little girl. And I said, "What do you think, sweetheart?" And she goes, "This just motivates me even more, Daddy."
Wow.
And I remember thinking, wow, okay, let's get you a better acting coach. Let's get you more opportunities. And so lo and behold, we got her a better acting coach, and she worked on it even more. And then we ended up putting up in the ante. We moved to Los Angeles last summer, about a year ago this time. Last summer, moved to LA, and she auditioned for 3 months straight, almost every single day, in and out of auditions. And after 3 months, we came back to Florida with our tail between our legs, mm-hmm. because she got no jobs. So now it's September of 2018. I'm at my office in Cleveland with the Cleveland Browns. And my wife kept texting me, like, "Call me now, emergency, call me now, call me now." And she's like, "Okay, no, not an emergency, just exciting news, call me now." And so I called her, in my office, the team's pretty much gone. And I said, "What happened?" She goes, "Guess who I just got off the phone with?" I said, and then I was just being facetious. I was like, "Who, The Rock?" And she says, "Yes." I was
like, "Get out of here."
I was like, "What do you mean?" She goes, "Not The Rock exactly, but his agent, he just saw her audition and he signed her to be his daughter in his next movie, Hobbs and Shaw, coming up." And I just go crazy. I'm pumped up. And next thing you know, I get a knock on the door, my office door, and I open it up and it's Baker Mayfield. And he's like, "What is going on?" I was like, "My daughter just got the job for Hobbs and Shaw." And he was pumped, and him and I were just like jumping up and down. And so he told my daughter, "Hey, we start shooting in October," a month later. So her and my wife went to London for all of October last year to shoot. Jason Statham and some other actors are in it as well. It was hard too, because that was during the World Series, the Red Sox World Series. And so my wife wanted the family to go to the World Series, but they weren't there because my daughter was shooting in London. And then in January, they finished the movie in Hawaii. And had the chance to meet The Rock and to meet the other actors. It was an amazing experience to see her in her elements. And the thing goes is, I always tell people, I was like, I'm not a good talent scout for acting, because the whole time I was like, I don't think she's very good, but the pros do.
Man, what a hard knock life for the Sua yeah. family, man. Half the family's filming a Rock movie, the other's getting a World Series ring.
Oh my goodness. It was a crazy, crazy year.
That's amazing, man. Y'all have so much to be proud of, dude.
I'm so grateful.
Like I was telling you before, my wife and I, Adi, are starting to think about having kids now, and like really starting to think about it. And so I'm more interested in learning from others than I ever have been before. And so I picked up on a couple things already that are a little bit abnormal, right? That response to rejection, that dedication, also this philosophy of watering your children's ambitions and going to such great lengths to mm-hmm. water them. And I want to dive into all of that on this show today.
Awesome.
But let's keep going down this rabbit hole. With her now being potentially, you know, quote unquote famous, do you anticipate any challenges that come with fame for your daughter being someone that's so young, regardless of just what, you know, the challenges that come with fame anyway?
Yes. The short answer, yes. And we've done a lot of research into child actors and the problems that pose, whether it be the fame or the money, and not only what it does to the child, but what it does to the parents and the family, just looking for money and fame. We've heard a lot of horror stories of parents trying to use their children for certain, exploiting their children in certain ways. And so that was one thing that we talked about as a family. We sat down, we said, okay, these are the potential things that could happen. And especially we said money right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And we talked about, hey, we're going to have an account where it goes to, no one's going to touch it. This is going to be your money when you're 18. And just kind of talk about it. We told her, like, you're getting paid for this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And that was right off the bat. And the number two thing is, we told her early, we said, you're going to have this, a lot of people are going to know who you are. They're going to want to talk to you. They're going to want to reach out to you. And we don't know to what extent yet. The movie hasn't come out sure. yet, but just really being grounded as mom and dad, we really want to help our kids just be true to who they are and to be humble. Humility is such a huge part of our not only the Polynesian culture to where I'm from, but just my wife, and just it's being humble. You're not better than anybody and no one's better than you. And so even within the home, we just trying to tell our daughter and help her realize, hey, you're still going to have those chores. You're no better than your brother and your sister. And I think she has done an outstanding job with that as well. And then also we had a talk with our other two kids and we're constantly feeling the pulse with them and say, mm-hmm. hey, how are you doing? Their sister has 30 some thousand followers on Instagram already. And the movie hasn't even come out. And when you go to school, kids are going to be like, hey, you're not Jerem, you're Eliana's brother. You're not Maya, you're Eliana's sister. And teachers even it's already starting to happen and the movie hasn't even come out yet.
Wow.
But we caught it early. We saw it happening and we're having these conversations and we're constantly having these conversations. And so, yeah, I think it is on the forefront of our minds. We talk about it all the time and we're kind of, our brains are scanning and looking for it. So we're able to catch it whenever we're trying. She's veering off, or even when our priorities are starting to veer off, we're catching each other to help us stay grounded.
That's amazing, man. One of the biggest challenges that I see with the even semi-famous people that I know is that mostly subconsciously or just not even intentionally, they create a bubble where no one around them gives them constructive feedback. You know, everyone's telling them you're so special, you're so amazing. And then it creates this environment where everyone just props them up rather than tells them, you know, what they need to work on. How do you plan to deal with that aspect?
That is so true. It's funny you mentioned that. This obviously not knowing what you were going to mention that. I've been studying that a lot lately, just the research on that. And there's this great research done by Daniel Goleman, who is really big on emotional intelligence mm-hmm. as well. And some of the research that he discusses, that's the meta-analysis of giving and receiving critical feedback. There's a great book called Insight by Tasha Unick, I believe, who talks about this as well. And the basic research says the higher you're up you go in the ladder, or the better, more competent you get at whatever you do, the less people are going to give you feedback. So bosses in particular, those who are leaders in the military, the generals, the CEOs, they have so many blind spots because people don't have the courage mm-hmm. to give them that kind of feedback. And a lot of times it's hard to give someone feedback who's at the top of the mountains. Like, hey, how can I help you get better when you're better than me at what you do?
Right.
And so that's why these elite performers, these great coaches have these people, these systems in place to give them feedback. Because a lot of times leaders in particular, they'll create they'll create what they think is psychological safety. Hey, you do feel safe to give me feedback, but people still don't want to do it.
Right.
And, now with our own child, I think it's easier with your own kids because, just simply because you're as a role of a parent, you can be really honest. They're always going to be mom and dad.
Right.
Like I'm always, no matter, even with my own self, my father and my mother and even my wife, they can give me the kind of feedback that no one else is able to give me because of the depth of our relationship. Now, mind you, excuse me. I know other people who don't have that relationship with their parents or their wives, and they don't allow people to give feedback. But with our daughter in particular, we are constantly giving her and our other children feedback, what you did well, what mm-hmm. you can work on. It is constant. And not just in acting, just in how to be a better brother or sister. I mean, just recently, today, we're noticing our kids are telling more white lies than ever before. Mm. My wife and I, just before this conversation, we're discussing, okay, what's going on? Oh, okay, they're around each other more. Oh, they're getting a little more physical with each other as well. It's early. They just got out of school. They're around each other all the time now. It hasn't been the case. Okay, now they're adjusting. They're staying up a little bit later. They're still waking up at the same time. Because now that we're letting them, and so we've kind of gotten off our routines. It's okay. Let's get back on the routines, and so we're just constantly assessing the situation, my wife and I, to be able to give that feedback.
I love it, man. I interviewed John Berardi, the co-founder of Precision Nutrition a while back. And the reason I'm bringing this up is I saw an Instagram, or I guess it was a tweet first and then an Instagram post that you made talking about, you know, reach out to someone that you really trust and ask them what's one thing I do really well and one thing I can work on. And that's something that I've actually used with people quite a bit. And John was telling me that once a month, he'll sit down each one of his kids and he will basically ask them some version of that question. And, you know, he has like a 2, 4, 6, and 8 year old. And so he's getting a very wide range of feedback, but sometimes it's really, really positive stuff. And I think, or really, really useful stuff to hear. And I just, I feel like I'm imprinting this into my mind of our kids are going to do what we do rather than do what we say. And so by soliciting feedback in that way, we show them that it's okay to get.
Exactly. And in behavioral, with the behavioral psychology, one of the things you learn about just early development, kids, they don't create habits. They don't create their, we'll talk about habits. Mm-hmm. They adopt them. They copy them. And so because of their brain and their mirror neurons are just highly activated, that's why kids at such a young age can learn. They're just sponges. They can learn so many languages and learn movement and learn just so many things just through observation. And that I love what you said about that, just starting it at a young age. And even there may be some people listening to this podcast episode and who don't have kids and who don't intend to have kids, but they're CrossFit coaches. A beginner, a novice, someone who just walks into the gym for the first time or who's doing something for the first time, the person who's coaching them or leading them or teaching them or parenting them, their behavior and what they do and how they act and what they say, you cannot underestimate how powerful that is and how much the novice or the child is learning from your response, how you act, how you treat people. That it's so powerful. And it's almost scary how powerful it is. And so to do it on purpose, with purpose, and realizing just your facial expressions and your routines. Because yeah, people will just copy it as opposed to they'll copy them or adopt those habits as opposed to creating themselves, because they don't have a structure, a foundation. So they're just going to go off you.
Right.
Yeah.
So you mentioned humility a while ago, and in your culture, in the culture that you grew up in, humility was a big thing. Yes. I grew up in a Catholic school with a very Catholic family, and humility, I learned that humility was like the ultimate virtue, and I still believe that in a lot of ways. And yet, over the past few years, I've realized that it's held me back in a lot of ways, because it's led to me not being able to acknowledge myself for my wins, to celebrate my wins, or to have any amount of pride. And so I've been pondering this quote a lot by Marianne Williamson that I'll read, and then I've got a question for you. So it's, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. And then there's about another paragraph, but you get the gist of it. Beautiful, beautiful quote. And I feel like so many times in my life, I've been so driven to succeed and achieve things. And I've also felt like I can't celebrate them, and I can't show them to certain people. And I've always had a hard time with the distinction between bragging and just saying what is accurate, right? So I'm wondering, how do you teach your kids to acknowledge themselves and celebrate without becoming arrogant or bragging? And how do you just teach them to distinguish the two?
Right. I think that's so powerful. First of all, that quote is one of my favorite quotes. It is incredible. And one of the things that I have experienced, I experienced what you experienced. This humility to the extent to where almost downplaying your successes, almost to the point where it's like, I want to share with the world, or especially like people who I care about, but then in the back of my mind is like, oh, you're coming off as bragging or cocky or egotistical. It's like, no, that's not me, but this is amazing to share. And then people, and then who knows, sharing it might inspire somebody else. Mm-hmm. But it's that constant thought in my mind. Before I answer your question, how I share with our kids, because we do talk about it quite a bit, is one of the things that I love to share and just realize is the shadow side of our strengths. All of our strengths have a shadow side. And for example, someone who's, let's say someone, humility is their strength. Mm-hmm. The shadow side of their strength could be what you just mentioned, what I experienced, we don't celebrate our strengths. It could be even a lack of confidence. Like, wait, is this me? Or is this, did I just get lucky? Or,
right.
And that's the shadow side of it. It's not a weakness. People who are really honest. There are some people who are just incredibly honest, and we love those people. Their shadow side to others might be, they're too blunt. I don't like talking that person. They'll just tell you like it is and hit you right between the eyes. And people might look at it as their weakness, but no, it's not their weakness. It's just a shadow side of their strength. People who are really kind and nice, that's a great strength. Their shadow side might be they get walked all over. Mm-hmm. They always say yes. They always put other people first before themselves. And so one of my strengths in our culture, in the Samoan culture growing up, is always respect your elders. Always respect your elders. Like, just incredible respect for them. That value or that principle actually held me back for so long in my career. Because of that value of always respect your elders, I didn't feel like I can give people who are older than me or more experienced than me critical feedback.
Wow.
And I would always be like a yes man. I wouldn't tell them the truth because I didn't want to disrespect them. And it took somebody telling me, saying, Justin, you don't even like give anyone negative feedback. Someone who was older than me, that was his feedback to me. He's like, I don't really like working with you because all you do is tell me all the stuff good I'm doing. He goes, I can get that from anybody. Mm-hmm. And that's where I checked myself. I was like, wow, it's because I couldn't overcome. I was thinking to myself, I can't give you critical feedback because you're older than me, because that'd be disrespectful. And I had to navigate around it and realize, oh, that's not the case in this situation. So to go back. So that's the shadow side of our strengths.
Right.
So with our kids, one of the things that we try to do is yes, teaching humility, but at the same time, really helping our kids, saying your gift can change the world. Like, you're not doing any service to us as a family, to the Su'a name, to your neighborhood, to your school, to the world, if you hide your gift. Mm-hmm. And go big and let's discover what it is. And other people celebrate it and not shy away from it. And when people say great job, not to say, oh no, it's because a lot of times people will say, oh, you look good. Oh, you're lifting, you PR'd, or you're doing great. And then we'll kind of diminish it and say, no, I'm not very good. Oh, it's because of my coach. You kind of push it away and say, right. No, it is my hard work. Oh yeah, I am working really hard. And that is something we do talk about quite a bit to our kids. Be humble, but at the same time, constantly striving for greatness. Mm-hmm. And striving for the best version of yourself. And we're big on, and we'll share our kids our stories. We'll share goals. We'll always write goals down with our kids. And I wish I could take a picture of it. I'll go shoot. All of us have just kind of, we have sticky notes of goals that we want to achieve in our mm-hmm. life. And you go into your kids' rooms and you'll see what they want to achieve. Like, I want to be on a movie is one of my daughters. My son wants to be a famous music producer. It might be due to money. It might be fitness. And we say, okay, what do you do? You can see my own. I have mine and my wife has hers. And so we put the bar really, really high, and it comes down to, once we achieve it, we celebrate it. But then it's like, okay, what now? Now mm-hmm. you're not better than anybody. Okay, now what? Now what are you going to do to achieve it? So that's kind of the indirect way we do it, but constantly still holding each other, keeping each other grounded. I think we inadvertently keep ourselves humble by saying, okay, now what? What next?
Right, right.
You're not great. You didn't hit the mountaintop. Okay, now what's the next mountain you're going to climb? To kind of keep us striving and pushing and growing.
Yeah, I love the last part of this quote, which says, as we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others.
That's amazing.
Right? We inspire other people to go for what matters to them when we go for what we want.
Yes, I love it. That's exactly right. And then to share, you're right. I think to share those stories, to share I think we tell our kids, yes, one thing to just share your successes, but talk about how hard it is. Talk about all the hours that you spent doing this. And I mm-hmm. think one of the ways to show humility is to not just show the final product, but to share with people how hard it's been and how many hours it's taken, and even your own insecurities. For my daughter, and that's why I like sharing the story where, she has cried. She has been rejected multiple times. And those are the part that keep us grounded and kind of helps other people say, oh, okay, there's nothing superhuman about her. Like, she's not some acting prodigy. It's just, it's been hard work and persistence and consistency, and that other people could adopt. There's been some luck involved.
Sure.
Even with my career, and it's been, I think that entirety, the entity of the story, helps us stay grounded.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So I'm not sure when you wrote this, but you wrote a book called Parent Pep Talks, 10 years ago?
Yeah, about 10 years ago. Okay. Yeah, actually about 2011, about 8 years ago. Yeah.
So Parent Pep Talks. One thing that I noticed in the acknowledgments before you start the book is to your parents. It says, for teaching us children that nothing is impossible. What did you mean by this?
My parents, they're incredible. My father comes from the island of Samoa when he was a teenager, not even speaking English, speaking a little bit, learns a language, 10 brothers and sisters, uncles and aunties living in the rough part of LA, Pacoima, California, in like a 2-bedroom home. My mother, rough upbringing as well. So my dad decided, so just kind of a crazy story. My dad decided to play baseball for the first time when he was in college, junior in college. Never played baseball. Was on a bench, obviously, his junior year.
Where did he play?
He went to BYU.
Okay.
Yeah, so a pretty big university.
Wow.
Led the nation in home runs his second year playing baseball, signed with the Dodgers. So it's crazy. So he signed with the Dodgers. He finishes, he gets injured, coaches, comes, and then once he retires, he ends up having he has a little pickup truck, and he starts doing like pickups, like from kind of like a FedEx type thing that will take freight from one place to another. Uh-huh. Turn that little pickup truck into two, into three, into a semi truck, into a 30 semi trucks, into a multi-million dollar trucking company. Never acted, ended up being like an actor with Eddie Murphy and on commercials. And my mom, who never graduated high school, was the COO of the company and oversaw like the finances. And unbelievable story of these two. Wow. And not educated, but they just went after it. And so I grew up in a home with two parents telling me, do it. Whatever you want to do, you can do it. And they would tell me, and I lived it. I saw us go from a poor apartment to a much bigger house and much better opportunities. And my parents were just saying, go for it. Like, whatever you want to do, let's go for it. Let's do it. And that's how I was raised. And no college education. My mom, no high school education. But just to see them serve and to love and to take their money and to provide service to other people. And they're just the most loving and caring people. Still are. It's incredible. So yeah, I dedicated it to them.
Dude, what a beautiful story. That is amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It all makes more sense now where you get this from.
Yeah, and to see just their positive, they're just positive. You're just such positive people. We can do this. We can do this. Let's go for it. And they would come home and share their stories where they got rejected. And I just heard it. I saw it and witnessed it. And so that's my education.
So cool, man. So you mentioned before that your kids will write down their goals and they'll have it in their rooms. How much of this equation is them seeing you working for the types of organizations you're working with and the working with the types of athletes that you're working with and just really seeing you go for your goals? How important is that in the equation?
I think it's paramount. Honestly, I think it's everything, and not because it's kudos tooting my own horn or more my wife's horn. I think it's because that's just what they see. I have the privilege and the opportunity to come home and to share with them stories about athletes mm-hmm. that I would never share with anybody. But I'm sharing it with my 6, 7, 8 year old, and they grow older and older. And the stories I love to share are the painful stories or the bad decisions that these guys are making, the failures that they're having. I'm hearing their personal stories and I'm taking them and sharing with my kids. Hey, listen to this guy. Hey, this is his story. This is her story. These CrossFit athletes as well. Wow. They hear all the stuff that they've gone through, and my kids are inspired by them. And I think in addition to that, I think even more so than my job and my career, they get to see it from their mom. I'm not home a lot. And my wife's story is incredible, where she was into fitness and she was teaching classes and cooking classes. And she got a disease that changed her life. It handicapped her, put her in a wheelchair for 2 years, severe depression, and still to this day lives in severe chronic pain day in and day out. And she is still battling through it and working through it. And as a result, at first, my kids had to do a lot of things that 6, 7, and 8-year-olds usually don't have to do, whether it be their own laundry and cooking their own food and breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and creating their own homework routines. But then for them to see my wife staying positive throughout all this, when doctors are saying, hey, you're never going to walk again, mm-hmm. and there's no healing to this, and to see her push forward and push through it. And I think that they witness probably the most mentally tough person we always joke, daddy teaches mental toughness, but mommy is the one who's right. most mentally, she's the one who right, exudes right. it more than anybody. And I think they just see it and they adopt it. Like, having their goals on their walls, like, we never talk about that. Like, mm-hmm. we've never had a direct session about that. They just kind of just done it. And I think they're just seeing it around them. I think what I do, a combination of my wife and what I do and what I teach, I think it's just kind of bubbling over. They're just kind of capturing it and catching it.
Oh, that's so admirable, man. Because anyone else in your shoes, like, no one would fault you guys for feeling like victims in that type of scenario, right? Just having a disease that's completely outside of her control come and uproot her life. No one would fault you guys, but you are choosing to own it and to have a just purely positive perspective.
Thanks. Appreciate that. And it has been so probably the hardest thing. It has affected our marriage. It has affected our communication. It has affected work and travel and how much I can be at my job compared to here. Mm-hmm. And I've had great organizations that are, I'm very transparent with them. And they're like, yeah, go be with the family, go help your wife. And so it's been a really cool combination of a lot of different things.
Oh, that's awesome, man. So the 10 chapters in the book are all on different mental skills. So I'll rattle them off quickly. Self-motivation, optimism, creating the right mindset, aiming high, how to calm down, how to fail, how to have confidence, how to be a leader, how to change, and how to enjoy the journey. Is there one of these that's been the most challenging to teach your kids, or even a couple that have been most challenging?
Yeah, probably the failure one. Just the failure has been so challenging. And the genesis of this book was really interesting, where I would get a lot of phone calls of parents asking for, like, hey, can you be my son's mental skills coach or whatever? And it just wasn't able to do it. And I would hear a lot of parents tell their kids great advice: relax, be confident, hey, learn from failures. Great advice. But they would never teach their kids how to do it. Right. Hey, tell your kids, hey, be confident. Okay, what are the principles or the strategies or the science of building confidence? Relax. Okay, here are some tools on how to help your child relax. And so it was really neat, is pretty much to help parents, giving parents the tools on how that they can be the mental skills coach for their own kids. And at the end of the book, what's really funny is parents will call me. They're like, wait, pretty much this book is for me. Pretty much you're telling me if I want to help my kids, I need to get my own self together. And that was never the intention, but I find it's cool to hear parents get that. But failure with our kids, that just tends to be the hardest thing, because our kids work so hard to get A's in school, or the pressure to do well on that standardized test, or the pressure to win student body president, whatever it may be. And my wife and I really believe that if we want to give them the best gift in terms of mental skills training, is to help them how to bounce back from failure, mm-hmm. how to learn from failure. Because a lot of times parents will take it harder than the kids when the kids fail. They'll try to live through their kids, and when the child fails, it's almost like they'll treat their child as a failure. No, you didn't fail. And the parents will think that they're a failure as a parent because their child failed.
Right. And they're reacting.
Yeah. So they'll react. And now the kid feels terrible. Now then all of a sudden the kid wants to quit doing that thing. And the parent's mad at them. Why do you want to quit? Well, I want to quit because you're making me feel terrible for failing here, and I don't want to let you down as mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible. I don't know if it's in the book, but a story in particular where I had a dad and a son come to sit with me, and I'd never worked with them. And I'm sitting with the father and the son, and he's 16 years old. And the father sits with me, and I say, okay, why are you guys here to see me? What do we want to talk about? And the dad goes, I want you to help my son. And I look at the son, the son starts rolling his eyes. And I could say, okay, I'm already assessing the situation. Okay, this is going to be rough. And the father goes, I want you to help my son realize that he's amazing. I want you to help him realize that when he fails, that me and his mom, like, we don't care. We just want him to give his best. We want him to know that we love him for who he is. And if he's a pro baseball player, great. But if not, that's okay. We love him. He's being too hard on himself, and that he needs to realize that just go out there and have fun. That's why we're here to see you. Can you help us with that? And so I look at the son, and he's not even looking at me. He's staring at his dad, and he's about to cry. And I'm looking at him, and he's looking at his dad. He goes, are you serious? And his dad goes, yeah, I'm serious. He goes, you're serious with what you just said. He goes, yeah, you're too hard on yourself. And he goes, no, that you'll love me no matter what. And his dad's like, yeah. And the son just starts bawling, just starts crying. He goes, and he takes a deep breath. He goes, what a relief. And the dad goes, what do you mean, what a relief? And I'm watching this whole thing unfold. He goes, what do you mean, a really relief? He goes, you guys are making it feel, I'm thinking that I'm playing for your love, that the better I play, the more you'll love me. And then if I fail, you're not going to love me as much. And I feel so much pressure in school and in baseball and everything I do. And the dad starts crying. And he hugs his son and goes, no. He goes, no, you can fail. You can fail. Like, we love you no matter what. Just do your best. We want you to be happy. And they're hugging. I'm sitting there, and I'm getting all teary-eyed. I'm like, this is incredible. And I look, and I said, there you go. I think you just took care of everything you need to take care of. And wouldn't you know it, the dad emails me about a week and a half later. He says, that conversation changed our lives. With our other children, we didn't realize that when our kids failed, we were not looking as failure as an event, but we were looking as failure as we were making them feel that we were labeling them as failures, right, and not helping them see. It wasn't them, it was us. And I think that's the chapter that I get the most feedback from, is like, wow, I teaching my kids that failure is an event and doesn't define who they are.
Right. So it sounds like the biggest piece of this is the parent's reaction, like how you react to them failing. Do you let them know that you still love them? Do you embrace them exactly the same as if they would have won? Right.
Exactly. Right. Do you give them that feedback? Do you help them realize? And it's not letting them off the hook. A lot of times people are like, oh, we're going to coddle them. It's like, no. Like, if you fail, you fail. And we'll tell our kids. And some, if you have a microphone or a camera in some of our conversation, you'd be like, whoa, that is harsh. Mm-hmm. It's like, that was terrible. You did bad. Like, and this is what you did bad. You did bad in this and this and this. Like, whoa. It's like right between the eyes. But right. We know you're good enough. We know you're capable enough to do it. We know you can do better. And we wouldn't give you this feedback if we didn't think you were good enough. And sometimes it'll hit them out of left field too. Of like, oh, I did so good in this. It's like, yes, you did great in this, but hey, this is where you could have done better. And in simple little things. And but yeah, you're right. And I think in addition to that, constantly having that conversation with them. And I think as well, something that helps my kids receive feedback is they see the feedback that my wife and I give to each other in front of them.
Right.
It's like, sometimes like, hey, how about this? And my wife will be like, could have done this better. It's like, yeah, you know what? You're right. I could have done that better. No, I could have done this. I'll get defensive in front of the kids. And my kids are like, huh, let's see how you're going to respond to that. It's like, yeah, you're right. Okay. And there have been moments where I did not respond well. Like,
yeah.
Terrible. And it blows up and it's ugly in front of the kids. And we hate it. And then my wife and I will talk behind doors, and I have to settle down, or she has to settle down both ways. And then we'll call the kids into our room, or we'll call a family meeting and say, you guys all saw how it went down. This is what went. I'm sorry. I should have responded this way. Oh, okay. And we're very big on transparency and forgiveness and, hey, this is how I should have done it. I'm sorry, kids, for yelling at you for this reason. And, hey, I was a bit too harsh with that feedback. I was a little emotional because of this. We're big on that. And so they see mom and dad fail all the time.
Right. I love that, man. A mentor of mine, Annie, talks about the importance of allowing our kids to, I keep saying our kids, allowing kids see the completion of an argument, right? Because a lot of times they'll see the beginning and then parents will finish it behind closed doors, but they won't show them the resolution.
Yes, exactly. That is exactly right. And we try to do that. And early in our relationship, we realized that as well, where when one of us would go and talk to somebody else about, maybe my wife and I are fighting and she calls a family or I call family, or this is what we're going through, this and that. And the other person hears it. And then and this is early in our marriage, or even our relationship, then we solve it out, but we never go back to share the completion with, hey, this is what happened. This was both sides of it. And so, there's just something about the completion, but the kids especially, because they're in the home and they're witnessing it. But I love that. Yeah, make sure they see the completion of it. I love that.
So I want to transition a little bit. This will continue to tie into raising kids. We talked about this a little bit before the show, and it's on the idea of focus. So as I get closer and closer to having my own kids, I am just hyper aware of identifying what is essential in my life and just getting rid of all other distractions. And in the first episode, the first podcast that we did together, I asked you a question about what separates Cy Young Award winners and Gold Glove Award winners from everyone else. And one of the things, you rattled off a list of things that they do differently, but one of the things was that you said they identify the one thing that is most important to continue working on and then channel all of their focus onto that. So first off, can you talk about the importance of focusing on the one thing or just essentialism in general?
Yes. A couple of good books on that. Yeah. Essentialism is great by Greg McKeown The One Thing by Jay Papasan is really good. But even just the science of attention control and the power, the importance of it. There's a book called The Habits by Charles Duhigg. And he talks about creating habits through the Keystone Habits. Mm-hmm. Basically, if you identify the one thing in your life that if you focus all of your attention on that thing, it will enhance all the other aspects of your life. And I know as I interact and I watch these elite performers, even in my own life, as you focus on those things, as you give your focus up to those things, you are able to focus through and say no to all the distractions. And the hard part comes down with what do you focus on? And that is creating that great awareness. And we always talk about, you always see people talk about balance. I haven't found it. It's just this constant, it's just constant. You're working this redlining, the needle is like, how much can I take? And quite honest, that one thing might change from week to week, month to month, day to day. And it's just this constant assessing, hey, am I spending my time right? Is it well? And even myself with at the time, two professional organizations and around the world and with the raise and traveling with my sick wife and my daughter who is acting, my kids, it is hard to focus. It is hard to create that space to be where your feet are really on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. But one thing that you see elite performers do is that's why planning is so important. That's why doing things on purpose with purpose is so important, to be able to even create some kind of structure to wake up in the day and say, this is the 86,400 seconds I have today. This is where I'm going to spend my time. Mm-hmm. And this is where I'm going to spend my week. And this is where I'm going to spend my month. And then to communicate that with the people who need to know that. Some of my biggest problems early on, and if you were to hear from my wife as well, I still struggle with this, is not communicating my focus.
Yep.
Not communicating
I can re- my – It resonates.
Yeah. And so where it's like, oh, this is where I'm going to be. It's like, wait, what do you mean you're going to be in New York next week? I thought we had this. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we're playing the Yankees. We're going to be there for 3 days. Was, oh, okay. Well, you're telling me this. Oh, and I was so bad to where I'm packing my stuff the night before.
Oh, God.
She's like, where are you going? I'm like, Los Angeles. Why? Oh, we're playing the Dodgers. How long are you going to be gone? A week. What? You're going to be gone for a week? And so
God.
As crazy as that sounds, I'm guilty.
Yeah,
I'm guilty.
Man.
But because I didn't know at the time, and that's I wasn't – I was prioritizing my life, but I wasn't communicating it. And I was getting things mixed up. I was missing important events for my kids. And then it's like, okay, these are my focus. This is my – and then, okay, I sit down with my wife. What do the kids have? What do we have? What do you have? This is my job. And that's where it becomes writing down and planning has become huge. And by doing that, that allows me to say no to anything else that disrupts that.
Amazing. Yeah, we were talking about organizational leadership before the show. And in my limited experience so far leading organizations, that communicating the vision is just so, so important.
Yes. And going back to the Goleman, he says it. That's one of the number one things, communicating the vision over and over and over again to where it's just embedded in their mind. And I also saw that because I was a poor communicator, I'm going to say I'm the greatest. I think I'm better with people outside of my family than inside my family.
Sure.
Now that my kids are older, they want me home. They notice. When they were younger, like I'd be gone for weeks at a time. They didn't know. They had no idea because
right.
they were so young. Now it's, where are you, Daddy? Where are you going? What time are you going to be home? And so I'll lay out my schedule and say, all right, kids, let's go over. What time does Daddy leave? You leave at 12:45 today. What time is he home? Tomorrow. What time do it? And so they know where Dad's going to be and they have my schedule. And I learned that I was breaking heart. I'd hurt my kids' feelings
right.
in their hearts, like when they didn't know where I was and they want me around. And so, yeah, you're right. Communicating the vision, communicating the plan is huge.
Yeah. I've noticed. So one thing I'm working very, very intently on this right now in my life, or in my work life. And I will delegate projects or start projects with people. And then I feel like I'm over communicating sometimes because I'll go back and ask after I've given them the whole project. Hey, just making sure that this made sense. Let me know if anything was unclear. And the response has just been incredible, right? People are then able to ask clarifying questions and things are just getting done more efficiently than ever. And it's because I'm creating the space for them to ask those questions and to make sure that everybody knows what to do.
That is amazing. A lot of literature on that is I think somebody said a leader has to say it like 9 times and ask for a clarifying question for somebody to say, oh, okay, I finally get it. What I think is so powerful in lead, I think that's great in organizations and leaderships. That's amazing that you do that. And it's so helpful because a lot of times people won't ask that with those clarifying questions. They'll just kind of guess and they'll wonder, but you provide the space for them to be able to do it. I think it's great. I think it would be better, and I'm speaking to myself as well, mm-hmm. If parents would do that more often. I don't think parents do that as much as CEOs and leaders of organizations like yourself and coaches. I don't think parents do that. I don't think parents will, a lot of times as a parent, because of the power position, just the psychology of parent over child,
right?
Go do this, go take out the trash, go do da, 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 just rat off all these things that they want you to do. And when the child doesn't do it right or missteps, and child isn't going to come back and say, wait, for a parent to say, okay, now tell me back. Hey, did I explain myself properly? I think sometimes I speak too fast, or maybe in my mind it's clear, but maybe you didn't get it. And a lot of times the kid is 6 or the kid is a teenager.
Right, right.
The brains aren't developed. They have other things they're thinking about. And so I think to take that strategy skill, what you just said, and for a parent to whatever instruction you give your kids to say, hey, did I clarify that right? Hey,
mm-hmm.
Or did you get all of that? Okay, now bounce it back to me. What am I missing? What do you think? Should we do this a little bit better? Is there a better way to do it? I don't think that happens as often as enough. We're trying to do it with our family, but we could even do a better job of that.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I've never heard that. I've never heard that in relation to parenting, but that's it's like intuitively a great thing to do.
Yeah. And I, it's something that reading all these leadership books and I'll, because parenting and family matters so much to me, I just will learn like, huh, I wonder if we could apply this to parenting. And a lot of times it's, whether it be lack of patience or just too tired of your kids. But yeah, I think it'd be a powerful strategy to start to employ for those parents who are listening.
That's awesome, man. So back to focus, back to finding, like figuring out what is essential and letting everything else go. So one thing, so I'll back up a little bit more. You and I did that live cast on the WAG Facebook group months ago. And we talked all about vision and goal setting. And yes. So I've been doing a lot of vision and goal setting with our employees, as well as people at seminars. And I'm always doing that sort of thing with myself. And one thing that I don't feel like I have a good enough process with and haven't been able to teach to others is how to prioritize. So, you know, when you write down your 10 goals or 5 goals for the year, how do you prioritize which one is most important? Do you have any thoughts on that? And how, you know, whether that be how you do it with other people or with yourself?
Yeah, I think it's so to kind of take a step back from me, one of the things that I like to do is to look at what the research, all the different strategies that are out there that people speak of, even if it doesn't resonate with me personally on a personal level, even if I don't adopt it myself, it might resonate with a certain athlete or a certain person that I work with. So to give them, hey, here's research shows that this works as well. Maybe you should try this. The reason I say that is because one thing that I've learned with people who are highly focused, military commanders, athletes who are just so driven out that what they want to do, they have different strategies. Mm-hmm. They're way different strategies. There's not like one that works for people. I've seen athletes be as meticulous as writing down their priorities, their hit list, HIT, mm-hmm. high important task list for that day, to athletes to who only do once a week, to athletes who literally say, I want to be a Hall of Famer someday. And then they just focus on the process day in and day out. They don't really set goals, but they're the best at what they do.
Right.
But you try to give them a strategy and they're like, no, that just, they just can't reject it because it's not their personality.
Right.
What I would do is in order to, and now I'll tell you what I personally do. So what I do is I have on my wall, on my bookshelf is a list of pretty much like the things I want to accomplish in my life. Like any, these are things that are really personal and things that only my wife and kids could see on a personal level. And I see them every single day. Mm-hmm. I see them every single day, but they're in the back of my mind. But then what I do is it comes down for me is attacking my process for the day. Like I know for the day I want to have an amazing family life. And I put that being a great dad and a great husband. Like that's paramount to me. I want to be the best mental performance coach that I could possibly be, parent and dad, I'm going to spend time with my kids every day, whether it be on the phone call, whether it be family prayer or family mm-hmm. meals. Like I prioritize that, making sure there's some days I'm not even in the country so it's hard to do that. Some days I can't even talk to my kids. So that's difficult, but it depends on the day. So with my
but your intention my craft, is to do it every
my
day.
Intention is right, yes, my right. intention is to do it every day, and that's like the kind of the big global thing is I want to be great at that.
Yep.
And then my family, I'm sorry, just then my profession. I'm going to read every day. I'm going to listen to a podcast every day. I'm going to take notes and I'm going to study it. I'm going to look at my life and I'm going to read books and I'm going to talk to other people who can better help me get better, whether it be in question asking or storytelling or entrepreneurship or whatever, to get better. I'm going to do something with that in my life as well. And then obviously I just have to be at my job and that takes a lot of time
execute,
as well. And so
yeah,
to execute, there's the execution of it as well. And then there's the fitness aspect or health aspect. And then I'm still trying to wrap my mind around what I want. Do I want the six pack? Do I want to be physically, or do I just want to be healthy and be able to move and to be able to throw batting practice and play with my kids? And so I'm moving towards the latter part where I just want to be healthy. I don't want to be injured. I think that's where I was starting to get. And so I'm shifting on what I do to accommodate that so I can accommodate everything. The short end of everything I'm saying, what I'm basically saying is there, for me at least, there are no answers, and it's messy and it's sloppy. And but however, I do keep my main pillars, whether it be my family, my job, my health, and my spirituality. I'll put that in there as like the key paramounts of the key pillars of what I do. And I'll look back every week at my life, and I'll look at my schedule and say, okay, am I spending enough time in those things? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is no, I'll tend to notice it. I'll notice that I'm not as sharp with my family or me and my kids or relationship. I'll look back like, wow, I'm not with them a lot, or I'm not spending time with them a lot. And so it's a kind of a collection of my vision, knowing what I want, knowing what my kind of my pillars of success are, what we just call them, my pillars of success, and then planning and then looking back at where I spent my time, being able to look back and where I spent my time to see if I'm being successful in those pillars or not.
And what does that process look like for you? Is it just you with your phone and pulling up a calendar, or is it with a notebook? What's your process for that?
Yep, it's with my black notebook. So I have my black notebook. I carry with me everywhere, and I'll look back and I'll go back on my notes. I'll go look back at my schedule. And then a lot of times I'm in planes a lot. It'll be through just kind of introspection and meditation. I'll put on some music. I love my favorite music are movie scores, like Gladiator movie scores where there's no words. And I'll just rewind. I'll think about the week past. What did I do Monday? Okay, where's my family, spirituality, health? Okay, good. Tuesday, where do I need to tighten up? Oh, wow. My wife and I've been neglecting her. It's been a busy week with work. I've been, mm-hmm. Okay, this next week, I'm going to go a little bit more in, take more effort to spend with my wife. And even if I'm tired, I'm going to stay up late after the game and really, really maximize or just go pour deeper into that. Oh, one of my children, wow, she's not getting a lot of love. Hey, let me spend more time loving on that child because we've been focused a little bit more on Eliana. Let me focus on that child, the other two or whatever it may be. So very, very aware of that. That's mm-hmm. what that process looks like.
I love that, man. You may have another term for this, but I've been thinking a lot about, so I have this new business coach and he taught me this concept of drift. So anytime we have an insight or we have a goal in our life, the time between the moment that we create the goal or have the insight and the next time we think about that thing is the amount of drift. So if I say, you know, I want to be a better batter and I don't think about that for another year, how effective is that going to be in actually changing my behavior, right? And so I've been thinking a lot about how do I decrease the drift as much as possible? How do I keep my biggest goals and the things that are most important to me just like as close to the top of my mind as possible? So I think that's a really interesting way of looking about it, a weekly check-in with yourself.
Yeah. Hey, how do you do it?
Good question. So right now I have the three things that I'm focused on in business and I'll just read them off to you. One is, am I doing my best to be curious, right? Rather than just telling people what to do, try to understand how they're approaching something before I give any feedback at all. Am I doing my best to be appreciative explicitly and proactively? And thirdly, am I doing my best to be productive? And I have I have some more context with that, but I ask myself that every day, and because of that, I feel like now I'm honestly ready to move on. Other than the appreciative one, I feel like I'm ready to move on to my next like big things because I've thought about them every single day. But it's with bringing where I'm still trying to close the gap is connecting my big picture, like year-long goals or 10-year goals to what I'm focused on today. And I think that measuring backward, I don't know if it would even be wise to revisit super long-term goals every single day. It might be a little bit overkill, but I think a weekly check-in is a great way to go about it.
I love those questions, by the way, and those questions are amazing. And then what I also love the fact is that it's a yes or no question. There's mm-hmm. something about yes or no questions, black or white,
right?
And where you can look at it, I love yes lists or yes or no lists where you can create this chain of yes, 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 yes. you just build that momentum and you're so honest with yourself, or you'd be yes, yes, no. And when you have like multiple no's in a row, you're like, whoa, okay, what am I doing or what am I not doing in PBF? I love that. One thing that what you're describing is there was an athlete I was working with who has these long-term goals, and he was questioning, he was having a hard time, like you said, close the gap from the future self to the current self. Hey, how do I keep that here? And he created these, I'm huge on, so he used to be big on on like process-oriented goals, trusting the process, mm-hmm. trusting the process. And then he got to the point to where, while trusting the process was great and he thinks it's wonderful, at a certain point in his life, at a certain part of his life, which is his profession, he wanted to set results-oriented goals. He's like, okay, I get the process. I'm going to trust the process. Now I'm going to have to start. I want to start chipping away at this mountain, mm-hmm. tangible chipping away at this mountain. And he kind of changed his process. Instead of focusing on the process-oriented, he went results-oriented. In a sport where he's setting himself up for failure, like, okay, you're competing against the best in the world who are going after the same thing. And just so you know, so he goes, I got to do it because that's going to be the thing that's going to take me to the next level. And what we did is okay, we're going to do this. It was a baseball player. He said, you usually don't predict how many hits you're going to get in a week. That's so hard. It's to predict that because you're facing the best pitchers. And so I'm going to get this many hits. I'm going to try to get this many walks. And I'm going to make his fielding. I'm going to be 100%. I'm not going to make any errors. And lo and behold, it ended up pushing him to the next level. But this is what we did. And so I told him that if you're going to set these goals, you got to be able to plan your response to failure. And he was so good to know that, oh no, every goal I'm going to set, I'm going to crush. He knew that he's setting the bar so high and that failure is a possibility, mm-hmm. a great possibility. And so he said, okay, I'm going to learn from those failures, but I'm going to keep the goals the same because I need to start pushing myself. And that's what he started to do. And he took it to the next level. So I guess the lesson from this is, if whatever way you set goals, you or whoever's listening to this, you've got to understand that sometimes the way you set goals and sometimes the way that keeps you focused in the past, although it got you to where you are now, it might need to be adjusted to get you to the next level. Mm. If you're focused on the process, and you might become stale. You might say, you know what? Let me change the way I'm doing my goals. Let me focus on result-oriented goals. Mm-hmm. Try it out. And to know that you better prepare for failure as well. It's not like you have to avoid results-oriented goals. I think sometimes they get a bad rap sometimes. But it's amazing. When you set a results-oriented goal and then you achieve it, especially if it's high, it's amazing how that feels. And then you can look and say, wow, I'm chipping away at this mountain. Then set it again. And then it's a better indicator on those tangible result-oriented goals that you want in the future. I think it'll help with that. But again, there's no one way to do it, but I think changing the way you do things, and who knows, maybe he's going to go back to the process-oriented goals later. You can put things on the shelf and pull them down as your life changes, as your circumstances change. And I think people, they forget that. They forget that what I did in the past might not work. It's worked for me up to a certain point. I can change it when you're at the top. You don't have to be sick to get better, as we always talk about.
Right, right.
You can change the game when you're at the top of your game to take you to the next level.
I appreciate that so much about you, man. We talked about humility earlier on, and you just exude this humility in the way that you approach your own profession and obviously the way that you approach your parenting. So thank you for that, man.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Thank you for the reminder that we need to be models of the people that we're trying to lead and that we're trying to teach.
Awesome. Appreciate it, brother. Thank you so much.
Before we get out of here, is there anything else you want to leave people in a leadership role or any parents?
Yes. You're going to feel the imposter syndrome a lot. You're going to feel like you're not doing a good job. You're going to feel like all of your work and your love, you're going to feel like a failure so many times, many nights, and you're going to question yourself. You're going to question if you're messing things up for your kids. You're going to question if you ruined them. And a lot of times the parents who are trying their best to be the best parents, you feel that it's completely normal. And I'm not saying this to minimize what you're experiencing, but to normalize it. You're going to feel lost. You're going to feel like you're not good enough, that your kids are going to find out you're a fraud. It's all part of the process. Just keep trying to get better, and your kids are going to recognize it, and they're going to notice it, and they're going to see your strugglings and your failings, and they're going to see that you're human. And a lot of the stuff that you're going to share with them, it doesn't sound like they're listening, but they're going to remember. They're going to listen. And the time when they need it, and the time when they're by themselves in a tough situation, they're going to remember mom's and dad's voice. They're going to remember their leader's voice, those words that you keep saying over and over again. It's not falling on deaf ears. Keep saying, keep speaking, keep encouraging, and great things happen.
Oh, that's a refreshing perspective, man. Very refreshing perspective.
Awesome.
You know, it's the same as any other area of life, right? If we're really pursuing greatness and excellence and trying to be the best we can be, then we're going to feel some level of fear and insecurity and imposter syndrome. So thank
Absolutely.
You for that.
Absolutely.
So you can find Eliana's dad at on Twitter at Justin Sua, that's Sua, and Instagram at Justin Sua. Justin, thank you so much for your time, brother.
Thanks a lot, brother. Appreciate you.
This episode is finished, but your training journey continues. Head over to brutestrengthtraining.com/SSW and grab your free pack of 32 accessory workouts that you can incorporate into your training and start improving your strength immediately. That's brutestrengthtraining.com/SSW.